Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the man who's been called the Obi-Wan Kenobi of small business.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour. May the force be with you. It's good to be, to continue to be with you. You just tuned in. Welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, we're glad you did that. We consider that a sign of high intelligence. Matthew Cartwright is our guest and our good friend. He is an attorney with the law firm Munley and Cartwright in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He is one of our top attorneys on the Brain Trust, and he always has something important that you and I can use. That we can learn from him with regard to the law, because if you work in the marketplace, if you operate in the marketplace, which all small businesses do, at some point in time, you're going to run into the law, either a legal compliance issue or something that's just a good business practice, or maybe on the business end of a litigation. And we're always glad to have Matt Cartwright back on the show. Matt, welcome back.
Good morning, Jim. How you been?
It's good. Doing great. It's good to have you back, as always. What's been running up your flagpole lately? What have you guys been working on?
Well, from time to time, as we get involved in corporate litigation, and you know, that sounds like it has to be a huge corporation, you know, a Fortune 500 company, but it doesn't, because every small business owner has to make the decision of what kind of entity he or she wants to start up. And
right.
A lot of them end up being small corporations.
Mm-hmm. Like my sub S corp.
Sure, and everybody knows that the reason you do that is to try to limit your liability, to prevent your personal assets being at risk.
Take advantage of the corporate veil.
That's right, and when you do that, there are things you need to think about. I mean, it's not just, well, I set up the corporation and it's gonna prevent piercing the corporate veil and protect my assets, and that's the end of it. No, that's not. That's about maybe a fraction of it.
That's like starting the race. That doesn't finish the race.
Sure. I mean, certainly your goal is to prevent piercing the corporate veil, and you have to remember that you piercing the corporate veil can happen if you mess it up, if you don't follow your articles of incorporation, if
right.
you don't follow your bylaws, if you don't have regular meetings with minutes, and if you do...
Or at least document that those things happened, and, you know, I mean, the main thing is you got to do the paperwork.
Do the paperwork, and you have to walk the walk. You have to have the meetings and do the minutes, and most importantly, don't do something dumb like commingling your personal money and the corporate money. Don't use your company as your personal bank account.
Right, right.
Because once you do that, it's relatively easy to pierce that corporate veil. And so, if your company hurt somebody or did somebody wrong, or another company, your personal assets are at risk. But that's a small fraction of it. The other part is, when you start a corporation, you've entered a world where there's a whole series of duties that you owe if you're in control of the corporation. You have duties to the corporation, and you have duties to the shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
Not the only shareholder.
One of the things to point out here, as you move into this explanation, Matt, is that I like to help people with, is think of your corporation as, you know, as the business owner that is owned then by the shareholders, and as the owner of your business, you've got several different responsibilities. And one of them might be as a landlord. It might be as a lessor. It could be as a shareholder. It could be as a board member. It could be as an employee of the corporation. You got all these different roles, and when you have a corporation, you have to quit thinking of yourself like a sole proprietor. Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. Now keep in mind, a lot of these comments won't apply to corporations where you know, our listeners are the owners of the company, and they're the sole shareholders.
Well, but see, I disagree with that, Matt, because that's where people get into trouble. That was the point that I was trying to make, is that if you're the sole shareholder, you still have to have those meetings. You still have to act like, you know, you still have to, you're the treasurer or the secretary or whatever. You still have to fill those roles.
Oh, that's all true. That's not what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You have to prevent piercing the corporate veil. You, no matter who owns the shares, you have to have those meetings and follow the bylaws and not commingle personal assets. But the duties I'm going to talk about now apply where there are other shareholders
right.
in the company, because you do have duties, even if you're in control, and especially where
Matt,
you're...
Matt, hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break, folks. This is fascinating stuff from our good friend Matt Cartwright. And remember what I said about landlord? I'm going to mention that when we come back after these messages. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. And my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for going there and using it to your advantage. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us and use our stuff. And you got articles, archives. You got 5 seconds. You got 15 minutes. Anywhere in between, we got something you can do there that will help you with your small business. And don't forget to take our poll question this week, which is right there on the homepage. And when you click your answer, you'll be able to see how the poll's going so far. Having a great visit with our good friend Matthew Cartwright, one of the resident attorneys in our Brain Trust. And we're talking about what do you got to do when you incorporate your business. And Matthew, you were just telling us about, we just got through talking about the general things that you have to do to incorporate and to stay incorporated and to protect the corporate veil that basically shields your personal assets from any liabilities of the company, any obligations from the company or a tax on the company. And now you were going to tell us about how that goes as a little degree of extra work if you have multiple shareholders.
Right. If you're not the only shareholder, in addition to following the corporate formalities to prevent piercing the corporate veil, in addition to that, if you've got minority shareholders in the company, you have to think about carrying out your duty to both the corporation and those minority shareholders. So let's talk about duty to the corporation first. We're talking about not stealing corporate opportunities. For example, you know, a red-hot deal comes in and you realize, well, you know, I could do this myself. The reason the deal came in was because your company specializes
right.
in that area of business. And if you take that yourself, you're stealing that opportunity from the company.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to create a liability to yourself. That is a personal liability if you do that, because you're stealing the money.
And that does not stand behind the corporate veil.
No, that's director officer liability.
That would be no different, folks, from something that's actually illegal in most states, and that would be for an employee to prospect for you, get the business, and divert it to his own company.
Same thing.
No, it's right exactly the same thing.
The other one is self-dealing, where you have a deal with the company. Suppose you're the landlord. You mentioned landlords. If you're the landlord, if you're charging excess rates for the company, basically it's the same thing. You're self-dealing.
I want to stop, though, for a second, Matt, because if you are the sole owner of the company...
That's different.
Then this is and I want to talk about that in a little bit, because that's a really good advantage of being a corporation. Go ahead.
Sure. But again, if you've got minority shareholders, and say you're the landlord of the corporate headquarters personally, and you're charging way too much rent, well, what are you doing? You're stealing money from the minority shareholders. Again, that's another liability, and that would be a personal liability on your part. And just generally not treating minority shareholders unfairly is really important, because there is a fiduciary duty owed to minority shareholders.
But think long and hard before you become a minority shareholder in a privately held company, because your rights are very limited. If I, at least in most states, many states, the rights of a minority partner are very limited.
Right, and you know how it ends up usually happening is we're talking about family companies here. So,
right.
For example, I represented the minority shareholders who were the cousins, you know, because Grandpa started the company.
It was, right.
Sheet metal perforating company, and the big byproduct there is the perforating holes. It's the scrap metal.
Right.
Well, what we proved was that the people in charge, who were the very cousins of our clients, were lining their own pockets by working with a local very obliging scrap metal dealer who would pay them in cash
yep.
for lots of the scrap metal. And again, they were just
and that can become big bucks in a company like that.
Absolutely.
Thousands of dollars a year.
Yeah. Classic example of not treating minority shareholders fairly. And, of course, there's insider trading. If the people, you know, at the helm of a company are making special deals on stock and they're not telling the minority shareholders about it, again, it's another way of fleecing the minority shareholders. It creates personal liability.
Right.
Part of the owners of the majority.
What about excessive distributions to, or bonuses, I should say, paid to the owners instead of distributions to the shareholders?
Well, you're right, Jim, and that's in the same category of the landlord who's charging way too much rent,
right.
way over fair market value rent.
But isn't it true that minority shareholders really have limited control over that? I mean, they have no control over whether distributions are paid or not, do they?
Well, you're right, and that's the problem, is that the only way they can enforce their rights is in court.
Right.
Now, they do have a right to accounting, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that has to be enforced in court as well.
Right, exactly. One of the things, what else do we need to know before we go to the break, about 30 seconds, what else do we need to know about when there's an example of multiple shareholders?
Well, of course, this is really no different from major corporate litigation. For example, when there are mergers that happen and the minority doesn't get a say
right.
whether the merger goes through, well, you know, it all started with the Unocal case way back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get enough money for the shareholders in the merger, the shareholders can sue the majority or the directors who were involved in approving a merger.
When we come back after these messages, one of the things I want to talk about is that landlord thing I was mentioning earlier, and why being a corporation that operates in a piece of real estate that the sole shareholder owns is a good thing for you. Tintail, stay with us.
At least the mystery is gone. There was no use talking, there was nothing to say when the band began to play, and we danced.
Welcome back, 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you. Having a great visit with our good friend Matt Cartwright, the law firm there in Scranton. Is it Scranton, Pennsylvania?
Yep, we have 7 different branches in northeastern Pennsylvania.
All right. Munley, and Cartwright, and the website is munley.com.
Right.
So check it out, folks. You do a lot of different – you operate in a lot of states, don't you?
I do. We go all the way up and down the eastern seaboard, and we get admissions pro hac vice. I didn't mean to throw Latin at you this early.
Hey, we know that word. Don't act like we don't know what that means.
Well, for the one viewer who doesn't know what that means, it's for this purpose, and you get lawyers are all admitted in different states, and so you don't have to take the Alabama bar exam. I get admitted for this purpose for a particular case.
But you... But you do a lot of representation for small businesses, don't you?
I do. I enjoy that. You know, the big companies that are often the perpetrators of breaches of contract and torts and antitrust violations, they already have lots of lawyers, and the small companies are the ones that need guys like
that. You're exactly right, and we're glad you're out there on our behalf. Matt, one of the things that I wrote an article a while back called the stealth advantage of small businesses. And I called owning the real estate that the business is in a stealth advantage for small business, because a lot of business owners have really grown their wealth as much through owning the real estate and charging the corporation rent, a rent that's, you know, they own the company completely, no multiple shareholders. They own the company, they charge them rent, and they buy the company, I mean, they buy the real estate at $100,000, let's say, in 1990. 20 years later, that real estate's worth $500,000. It's paid for, but the rents have gone up 4 or 5 times, and they could be drawing more rent, more legitimate IRS-approved rent from the company than they're paying themselves in salary.
Oh, that's a great description, stealth revenue producer, because it's true, and it's legal, and it's proper. And Jim, I want to say it's not limited to single shareholder companies.
Right.
As long as the rent is fair market value,
exactly.
You can do that no matter how many shareholders there are.
Well said. But what I was going to say, though, if you're a single owner, you can push the envelope. The IRS is the only, because the IRS doesn't like it if you overcharge too much for rent, because then you're replacing earned income, which is taxable at a different rate and has employment tax on it.
Yeah, no question about that.
So they don't like that. So the IRS or your shareholders are the only ones that are going to keep you from charging more. But the thing is that there are a lot of small business owners who work so hard. They put every penny that they could get their hands on back into their business. They didn't produce a great retirement account, but the real estate that the business owned, that they bought early on, wound up being enough to help them retire very comfortably.
Oh, sure. Well, you get the buildup of equity as you pay the mortgage off over time, and you get the appreciation in the real estate value, assuming that sort of thing continues in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a terrific way to build wealth.
I've got about a minute and a half, Matt. What are some other things that we need to know about having? Do you want to talk about LLCs?
Well, here's what we ought to mention is a lot of the disputes in closed corporations are about accounting issues, and you know you didn't pay enough of a dividend. When you merged the company, you didn't get you got taken by the other company. And therefore, the minority shareholders got hurt. So a lot of it really comes down to disputes between accountants. Number one, that makes for a very boring trial, I have to tell
right.
you. but number two, we're talking about avoiding litigation.
I mean, yep.
You want to concentrate on growing your business and growing your wealth. You want to stay out of court if you can. And the best way to do that is to hire the best accountant, and the accountant with the best reputation, one that everybody trusts, to handle it. And also have a good company lawyer that can guide you through all of this, because that's the best way.
And have a lawyer and an accountant who know each other and work with each other. That's another good idea.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're out there in flyover small business Main Street America. Hey, Matt, thanks for being here. Good job today. Well done.
Well, nice to talk to you again.
We'll do it again real soon. Matthew Cartwright, folks, wasn't that a great, quite a bit of good information there that he gave us. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingham, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.